Donald Trump now seems convinced that the initial Easter relaunch of the economy is probably a bad idea. He's acknowledged that. So he's decided to push it way back by 2 weeks. A senior White House official said there's a lot of internal energy pushing for May 1st, because that's when the end of the White House's 30 days to slow the spread. That energy is especially coming from some of the more economic and politically minded aides. Quote, we are looking at when the data will allow the opportunity to reopen. So when you're thinking about when to reopen and potentially consign, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to getting this infection, you should be talking to the economically minded aides. But anyway, that's what's going around the White House. So the concern is that the situation on May 1st might not be that dissimilar from right now, that our testing capacity won't be significantly different. Does Donald Trump see that as a potential problem? Let's find out.
The administration discuss the possibility of reopening the country when the administration does not have an adequate nationwide testing system for this virus. Don't you need a nationwide testing system for the virus before you reopen?
We have a great testing system. We have the best, right now, the best testing system in the world. But there are certain
people
sections
right now to make sure people are safe going back to work. You don't want to send people back to the workplace.
We want to have it, and we're going to see if we have it. Do you need it? No. Is it a nice thing to do? Yes. We're talking about 325 million people, and that's not going to happen, as you can imagine. And no.
So what he talked about as, do you need it? No. Is it a nice thing to have? Yes. Is a national capacity to test people in line with what experts say is necessary to stop us creating a new higher peak in the quarantine. And he is incredibly casual about it. It's like, do you have the right footwear for your trip to Hawaii? Well, no. I mean, it would be nice to have, but we don't need it. That's how he approached that.
Yeah. It is him against knowledge. He doesn't want to know because he'd rather tell you what the facts are than give you the facts that actually exist, because he then can filter it through his BS machine. And that's what he has built and continues to give to people during that daily press conference for hours on end. And it's very, very frustrating. And, you know, like there are everyone goes to the doctor and everyone wants a Z-pack, and I get it. You're like, listen, just give me an antibiotic, I'll be fine. And the doctors have reasons why they triage you and send you one way or another. And you always get frustrated when it's based on what you probably have versus you wanting something tested. But the doctors have various reasons for why they would or would not give you that treatment. And you want that reason to be like their medical knowledge and not something terrible like in America, the insurance industry, like we're not going to get reimbursed for that. Or in Trump's case, something that we hadn't had to think of before, him just wanting his stats to be down. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so wildly frustrating. He just wants his stats to be down, and he doesn't care who actually dies. This is along the same lines as an argument from Trump, essentially saying like what they're talking about with the stats. A lot of them are trying to say we are being too, Burke said the other day, we're being too liberal in what we consider a coronavirus death. They're all trying to find ways to juke the stats here, and it's not helpful, and it will get more people killed.
That is definitely the fear. Yeah, we've been going all week. We've been tracking as that the numbers are made up or the numbers are overinflated has spread, much like the coronavirus, through Fox News and their guests. And it is now universal. It took about a week to go from Diamond and Silk to Harris Faulkner and literally everyone else.
Dr.
Fauci just was asked about that, I believe either this morning or late last night. He was asked about if the numbers are being inflated in some way, and he says no, there's literally no reason to believe that. And that's good that he's acknowledging that. The issue is that he should also acknowledge that there are many reasons to believe that the numbers are actually an undercount. Not a 50 times undercount or anything like that. I don't want to spread conspiracy theories in the opposite direction, but they're definitely undercounted. Even specifically just in New York, there's a lot of reason to believe that up to potentially 1 to 200 people per day might be dying from it that are not being counted because they're dying at home without ever being diagnosed.
And they always want it both ways. They want to be able to say it's undercounted so that they can say that it's not as deadly a virus as it has proven to be, that everybody's saying it's 0.5% mortality. I don't know where anyone's getting those numbers from, but I've heard it from multiple conservatives that that's what they're saying. But at the same time, they want to say fewer people have died in total. Well, then if you're saying it's undercounted, you're forgetting that there are a lot more people dying of this, as evidenced by stories we've covered on TYT Network, where it's people saying, like, I had all of the symptoms of coronavirus, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't test me until I was on a ventilator.
Yeah.
And yes, you're on a ventilator, and they tested positive, and now they become part of the stats. But what if they had died before that? That's happening all the time, as well as people trying to say, like, oh, they had a pre-existing medical condition, which was exacerbated by coronavirus. Can we please say that your cause of death was you having, like, weak lungs or asthma or something like that? But that's not the case. Yeah. Like, that's like saying, listen, I had a pre-existing condition where my heart beat but could stop, and then I got hit by a bus. Mm-hmm. And the cause of death is not the bus. The cause of death is I'm mortal.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said yesterday, like, we have known from the very beginning that it is more deadly for people with pre-existing conditions. That's why we need to be vigilant and take it seriously. That is not a reason to take it less seriously and ignore the numbers. That's a reason to be more on our guard. But in any event, I do want to focus on this May 1st date, because now aides are talking about it. Trump seems interested in the idea. Let's go to Dr. Fauci now. Does he believe that it is plausible that we could be reopening in 20 days?
Are you comfortable with the date of May 1st?
Well, as I've said so many times, Allison, that the virus kind of decides whether or not it's going to be appropriate to open or not.
Okay, so hold on. I want to replay that really fast, because I want you to see his immediate reaction as soon as she's done asking the question.
Are you comfortable with the date of May 1st?
Well, as
I don't want to go too into it or anything, but he didn't seem 100% comfortable with answering that question. And it's probably going through his mind every time he gets asked a question like this, that he knows if he's going to be honest, it is going to be contradicting the position of either Donald Trump specifically or the government more broadly. He probably has to worry about what the consequences might be. And in any event, he's right there. The virus is going to decide. And well, to some extent, how seriously we take it in the meantime is going to decide.
Right. Exactly. That's what it is. You say you've covered it on the show so far this week, but all the people on Fox News who are trying to get you out there to ignore the fact that America has very obviously, and it is impossible not to notice it, changed how it behaves since this had its initial exponential curve. And they want you to ignore that. And Britt Hume is on Fox News saying, you know, maybe this wasn't as bad a virus as we thought it was at the beginning. When we did everything we could to lessen the growth of it, we don't have proof that it has stopped growing at that rate since. It hasn't been enough time. But they're trying to have it both ways always, or claim credit for something that we got to happen.
Yeah.
The scientific community, the Anthony Fauci's of the world, convinced Trump to do this. And Trump led from behind Democratic governors on the coast who made these very intense, difficult decisions that are very obviously the ways you stem the growth of a virus. And Trump's trying to take credit, and at the same time, his people are trying to downplay the severity of it in the first place.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm seeing in the chat right now, at least one person is saying that they knew someone who had all the symptoms of coronavirus, ended up dying, but was never actually tested. So they're not going to be included in the stats right there.
That sucks.
Yeah. And so what I'm worried about is the possibility that, in the same way that you just said, Fauci and these other doctors were able to, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, convince him to finally seem to take it at least a little bit more seriously, that he listened to them. And now Fox News is unified that this is a complete waste. Tucker Carlson's saying it wasn't that bad, like, we're totally fine. He said that on the first day that the deaths reached almost 2,000. He said it again the next day when the deaths were very near to 2,000. I don't know what he said last night. I don't watch his show, but the deaths were almost 2,000 again yesterday. And look, they didn't go up. They weren't doubling each day or anything like that. Let's acknowledge that. But I would say that you know, two-thirds of a 9/11 a day dying is pretty significant. And if they were dying from literally anything other than COVID-19, Tucker Carlson would be taking it seriously. He'd be making it the entire thing of his show.
Or if they died from COVID-19 under a different president.
That's a great point. This exact situation is the only situation in which they don't care about those deaths, or at least they have an incentive to minimize them. And that matters, not just because of them, but because Trump listens to them. He was interviewed by Sean Hannity recently. He said, you know, I learned from watching your show that we're doing great with ventilators around the country. Like, that's where you learned it from? From Sean Hannity. He learned it from you.
I mean,
it's just stupidity bouncing back and forth like the dumbest Pong in existence.
Well, every possible, there's another way to interpret that that's equally mortifying and horrible, which is he's just trying to plug Sean Hannity's show.
Maybe, yeah.
And incentivize the repetition of BS fake stats that the Trump, not even the Trump administration, because Fauci's part of that, but that Trump himself has convinced enough lackeys to spread. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Insider had an awesome report where one of their reporters went to a rural area of Eastern Virginia, an area that is quite conservative, went heavily for Trump in 2016. And the reporter talked with some people who have long been Trump diehards, real loyalists. And the reporter said that as he was going around talking to these people, he noticed that this was an area where from 2016 on, you could see Trump signs all over the place. And they lasted year after year, but they've become more rare. And that sort of tacks with what he got from some of these people he talked to, the big Trump supporters. So I want to go through a few of these. Now, I understand it's anecdotal, but it is interesting what it might have been that finally got through to them. So Cliff, a 25-year Chesapeake Bay waterman, says, "A few weeks ago, I could ignore the parts of his personality I didn't like. That's over. I don't believe anything he's saying now." And indeed, the lies have they've become pretty terrible. And the consequences of the lies are far more obvious, Brett.
Yeah, I just love, like, I would work my entire life to try to find out a way to be referred to as a Chesapeake Bay waterman.
You probably need a boat, I would imagine. So work on
I'm
that.
I'm barely a man. I can't imagine being a waterman.
That's true. Well, you're wearing blue. That's a start. So we went from the waterman. Let's talk to an oysterman who said, this is Matt. He's got no idea.
Oh, shucks. Sorry. It's a shucking joke. Yeah, it's an oyster.
The shuck up. he's got no idea what the hell he's doing. And I think he's flat out lying to everyone about how bad it really is and how bad it's going to get. He goes on to say he believes Trump initially played down just how bad the infection and death rate would be while contradicting the advice of his own experts and guidelines from the federal government. And so, yeah, those are just two people. Bear in mind, we're going to have more in a second. And it is the most anecdotal of anecdotes. But I do think that the fact that the lies are so clearly, obviously, and quickly connectable to actual deaths, it at least gives it a chance of breaking through in a way that his other lies perhaps never have.
Right. And to whom does it need to break through? How many people does it need to break through to? And I'm pretty sure that Trump lost Virginia almost certain that Trump lost Virginia anyway, but like the diehard Trump supporters, if you're seeing a small proportion of them realize the BS that's been so obvious to so many of us since, I want to say, 1992, mm-hmm. Then that's a good thing. And I welcome it. I welcome it. I welcome anyone who looks around and sees evidence of something, and their every logical bone in their body would say, I believe that evidence. It should lead me to a conclusion. Versus then looks over at Trump and sees him giving them the BS and then says, all right, that's enough. That first quote, I could ignore the parts of his personality I didn't like. That's over. And in a cult of personality, that's what I like to hear. People saying the personality, it's too much. It's the people who have the Kool-Aid to their lips and are like, you know, on second thought, mm-hmm. I don't like the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And yes, this is my office mug.
And it is filled with Kool-Aid. Yeah. And you would hope that, like, if anything was going to break through, it would be the person who has pitched themselves as the only person who's actually qualified to save your life being obviously not able or even honestly all that interested in saving your life. Now, that's not to say it's going to get through everybody. There are people who drank the Kool-Aid after all. But hopefully it will. And I want to give a little bit more information from the Insider Report. And you should definitely track this down and read it. A recent Centers for Disease Control mailer titled President Trump's Coronavirus Guidelines for America was widely mocked among locals here as nothing more than flimsy campaign propaganda, government instructions to help prevent the virus's spread that Trump himself seemed to undermine. And a little bit more from Matt, who said, Matt told me he's always disagreed with Trump's attacks on immigrants. Quote, a lot of the guys in shucking houses around here are Hispanic migrants, and they're really good guys, hardworking guys. But through it all, from the Muslim ban to impeachment, he stuck with him. Now the trust is gone. Quote, he thinks we're all stupid and we'll show up for him no matter what. At this point, I can't imagine bringing myself to do that. And you are right. Hillary Clinton won Virginia by about 5 points. This particular county went for Trump by 10 points. And so for a lot of places, moving 1% or even 3 or 4% of the electorate's not going to matter. But maybe for Wisconsin, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, a few states like that, it could be important. We saw how close it was last time.
I would say that over time, the xenophobia in a competitive jobs market where unemployment is so through the roof, like that will be something that you see Trump banging hard again, saying, hey, and I'm sorry I said those words in that way, but he will go after it again, saying, listen, we need to get the jobs back and it's the Mexicans' fault. That is going to be something he's going to hammer down on. But, and again, sorry I said it that way, but I remember that when I got that like little like postcard in the mail of Trump's advice. And if you read through it, it was wildly different than what Trump himself was saying, mm-hmm. But still had little like echoes that we keep seeing that whenever you, that plays out so obviously to everybody when you watch those pressers, which is, people are trying to find out which bone they can throw to Trump, saying like, okay, I'm still on your team, but still, and it's so pathetic that they have to do this, convey actual information because their priority is to save people's lives. And they've had to make that impossible decision, which is like, I have to sacrifice some bits of truth to the Trump Kano. And then just so I can say like 80% of the stuff I should be saying right now.
Yeah, maybe. So like I said, I mean, it's obviously anecdotal and we will see. I mean, Emma, at some point, if there are Trump rallies, we'll go to them and she will talk to people, although those are the people probably most inoculated against any sort of realization about literally anything.
And really quick on Emma, watch Rebel HQ because they've been putting together, like, since there haven't been Trump rallies, go to Rebel HQ's Facebook because they've been putting together like Trump supporters on videos and it's just like greatest hits of them being morons.
Yeah, it's greatest hits to your faith in humanity. That's what it should be called. One thing that I wonder if on Twitter it might be breaking through, and so I'm asking this to you, Brett, but also to the audience in the chat, is when he's doing these daily coronavirus pandemic press conferences or whatever, and he's lying regularly, but then when he goes on Twitter, as he did this morning, and talked about how the TV ratings are higher than ever before for these, That's got to get through to some people that, like, even someone who watches them and wants to watch them and likes him must think, wait, why are you bragging about the ratings for a disaster response press conference? What a weird thing to talk about. That would be like, I don't know. I don't want to make an analogy because that's how terrible it is. But he's crossed so many lines, many of which turned out to not even be there. But there were apparent lines, like, you know, mocking the parents of, you know, like Gold Star parents and things like that, mocking POWs. Like, at some point, he's going to cross a line for different people. And I think that bragging about the ratings for something this serious, as the death count continues to climb as rapidly as it is, and that's got to break through to some conservatives at least.
Yeah, like he's saying, like, I'm glad the Titanic happened because a lot of people saw the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. That's a good analogy. I don't know where I would have ended up, but that's a good one. Obviously, we know that our current pandemic can be traced back to animals. And the fear is that in the future, animals might lead to other sorts of infections going, you know, crazy viral across the country and across the world in this particular way. And a lot of experts are worried that if we lower our guard in terms of food safety regulations in large slaughterhouses in particular, that likelihood could become more grave. And so we have a new analysis from Food and Water Watch that is included in a lawsuit against the USDA that says in plants, these are large slaughterhouses, some of the biggest corporate slaughterhouses on the planet, where a new regulatory or deregulatory system has been put into effect by the Trump administration, that, quote, federal government veterinarians were precluded and prevented from adequately inspecting animals and carcasses that had signs of diseases, recent treatment, and other abnormal food safety and public health related conditions that would render an animal or its meat not fit for human consumption. So what they're worried about, Brett, is that this new change, which we're going to give people details about, is going to make it more likely that things are going to slip through the cracks, either unintentionally or just as a cost of doing business, and that could make people significantly ill. And remember, like swine flu, we're talking about places where there's a lot of swine going through literally every day.
I mean, regardless of like effects on future potential foodborne pandemics, this will have effects now. This will have effects on people's food safety. And when you thought of ways you could die during a pandemic, food contamination didn't necessarily start out as one of them. So congratulations to the Trump administration for using this as an opportunity to get more stuff they wanted anyway, and in doing so, finding new ways for people to die.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to go back to the experts before we get into some of the details about the changes. So this is from Zach Corrigan of Food and Water Watch, who says, while people across the country are fighting against a dangerous pandemic believed to have come first from animals, USDA is eliminating necessary safeguards against the spread of infectious diseases from swine. USDA is endangering public health. And so, as we alluded to, a lawsuit is going forward. But let's talk about some of these changes now. So first of all, a quote from an inspector, Anthony Vallone. We've previously used this. This is back a couple of months ago about the effect of these changes. So Anthony had said, it's so hard to go to work without feeling physically sick watching this just happen, unfolding in front of you, especially since you took the oath to protect the American people. And specifically, what are they changing? So in traditional plants, as many as 7 federal inspectors work on the processing line, handling hog carcasses and checking for defects. Under the new system, that number will be reduced to 2 or 3 federal inspectors who have more experience, but who will have limited hands-on interaction with the carcasses. And so instead, the plant's own employees will be checking and sorting the carcasses and letting the federal inspectors check their work from a distance, and there is no required federal training for those employees. So it is less inspectors, they're farther away from the line, they're the plant's employees who have a strong incentive to just let the line go as fast as possible, who aren't being trained, are going to be responsible, and some guy's going to occasionally glance over from 20 feet away and hope to see a sign of disease.
It's a jungle out there, and by a jungle, I mean the book The Jungle. Mm-hmm. So central to the progressive movement is stuff like this, where you find ways to protect people who seem powerless from the whims of corporations and other powerful entities. Food safety is one of them. Like, this is one of those This is one of those regulations no one should complain about. Like, you should be happy that we are inspecting food to make sure it doesn't kill people. Now, it gets more and more perverse the more you get into it. It's weird that I'm saying, like, I support the people who want to handle animal carcasses. I think more people should have hands-on experience with animal carcasses. Like, that sounds crazy, but in this situation, it absolutely works and is necessary to keep people safe.
Yeah.
But just one other thing is, like, built into their – you'll hear capitalists – like, this is an actual argument from people who want unbridled capitalism without common sense regulation. Their argument is literally this. If people die, then it will have an adverse effect on the business model of that company that produced food that killed people. There's so much wrong with that, aside from just the obvious. And it plays out the way we see it play out with, like, bailout money. Bailout money will come in and save those companies. They're not afraid of it because the reason they have those big deals in the first place, the way that they've been able to get away with a lot of the shady practices they've had in the first place, is because they give money to politicians who give them favorable status that politicians until now essentially have been too afraid to do because of how obviously stupid Trump's plan is. But Trump, this stuff that you're pulling from before the pandemic, has been so brazen and doesn't care and has been able to, like, be the mouthpiece for the wackos, like the anti-vax type wackos out there. It's very, very frustrating. And then now with the pandemic, when people are looking the other way, he's using this as an opportunity to do things that he wasn't brazen enough to do back then.
Yep. And more quickly, certainly. This is, and it's so, like, they try to change regulations to benefit corporations and increase their profits all the time. That's the most obvious thing in the world. But this is the most obvious example of it. Like, who looks at this, a regular person, and says, yeah, that's for me. They did that to make my life better. Nobody thinks that. It's obviously just to let them get more hog carcasses processed every hour. That's the only reason. They're literally, by the way, they are literally changing the federal limit on the line speed. It's being removed. So there was a limit on how fast you could go, which made it a little bit more likely that you would find defects if they were there. No, that thing could be zipping by at 100 miles an hour. It's going to be like the most bloody, like, macabre I Love Lucy episode ever.
Trichinosis episode.
Just bits of... Oh, and by the way, in this, what is Lucy... What is she stuffing her face with? Well, potentially feces, sex organs, toenails, bladders, and unwanted hair. Those are the sorts of defects, among others, that these inspectors were looking for. And Trump feels like weeding those out costs too much money. You need some more pig in your meat. That's what you apparently need.
Can we go back to that last graphic, John?
We can.
Unwanted hair. Is there wanted hair?
Wait, that's not one of them.
Like, when I said there would be pigtails in my pork patty, I thought just the tail of the pig, not actual pigtails.
Yeah.
I'm fine with the sex organs, though. Like, that's probably meaty. Bladders, even. I don't care. But the nails and the feces and the hair.
I want to... So I want to end with a suggestion. So this is something I tweeted about yesterday, and people seem to agree largely. Beyond sausage, you should be done with sausage. You don't need regular sausage anymore. It is great. The price could go down a little bit. That is true. But you don't need regular sausage. There is the difference between it, if there is, and I don't think for a lot of people they would even necessarily know or care about the difference. But if it exists, it is not significant enough to open yourself up to the baked-in health risks of the regular sausage, let alone what could potentially be in it that we don't expect to be there, as well as the obvious, the suffering of the animal, the effect on the climate, all of that stuff. Like, it is just too good. And there are more and more meats where the meatless version of it is just indistinguishable. Like, Guardian crispy chicken tenders, those are as good as chicken, honestly. Like, chicken nuggets aren't even meat. And yet we still grind up a chicken to make something that's arguably not meat. Go with the fake version. It's just as good. And Beyond Sausage is now just as good as well.
I just don't like the name.
I know.
Just like Better Sausage.
Better Sausage. And look, the Impossible Burger.
I can't believe it's not sausage.
I can't believe it's not sausage. That's a home video. Anyway, yes, just do that. Go with those. Ignore what I just said before right there. But what I said earlier, go with that. Lately, Brett and I have had a lot of time on our hands. There's a pretty good chance you do too, and there's a pretty good chance that time won't be going away anytime soon. So we want to help you spend that time wisely and let you know what we're doing to spend that time. This is our top 10 quarantine time sinks with me and Brett Ehrlich. Brett, you've got five?
Yes, I do.
I have five as well. Together, we make 10. Why don't you start us off with your number five?
Love it.
Oh, and
okay.
Really fast, are these ordered in any particular way?
Sure.
What?
Yes, they are.
What way?
From 5 to 1. And I went crazy. Okay, John, do you want me to out myself?
Yes. They're,
for comedic effect, for entertainment value, I put them in a certain order. And I hate to break it to everyone, but that's how all lists go on the internet.
Okay.
Entertainment, whether it is to satiate some kind of like weird fanboy lust that you have for movie lists, they throw one in that's for like, it's not actually the best, but it's to like serve fans. Do you want me to out the entire industry? I worked at Rotten Tomatoes for a while, damn it.
That's true. Okay, well, you're the expert, so that's why we're going to let you go first with your number five.
All right, number five is just actionable intelligence you can move on right now. HBO is streaming 500 hours of free programming. So a lot of people are like, hey, I have a lot of things on my watching to-do list, but a lot of them are on HBO, and I don't have the money, to, especially in this climate, to fork over so that I can watch The Wire. Well, I hate to break it to you, but you got no excuses anymore because they are streaming 500 hours of free programming, including full seasons of – these are the full seasons – The Sopranos, Veep, Succession, 6 Feet Under – The Wire, Ballers, obviously.
You gotta watch that.
Barry. I've interviewed two people who are on Ballers as regulars, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Barry's great. Watch Barry.
Barry, Silicon Valley, and True Blood, as well as 20 Warner Brothers movies in HBO's current catalog, like Pikachu, Lego Movie 2, Crazy Stupid Love, which you can watch whenever. It is like the new The Great Outdoors. Like whenever it's on, I watch it.
That's true. Wait. So these are anyone can do this?
Free. For free right now.
Oh my God.
Go do it.
This should be your number one.
Adnan Syed. This is just something you can start doing. Stop watching this show.
No, don't do that.
Sorry.
Every day
I don't know.
Be here.
John,
live.
We have different motivations
we
here.
Do.
For John's sake, keep watching the show. For my sake, let's hammer watch The Wire and then talk about it together later.
That is a great suggestion. I mean, any one of those shows could last you for quite a while. Watch Barry. It's great. I can't say anything about Ballers. It's the weirdest thing. I am a massive fan of The Rock. No interest in Ballers. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I don't
Your
think
video
you were
is
big in-
having a weird effect, by the way. People are saying you look like William Wallace. Now you look a little bit like Gandalf.
Wow.
Do you see your video?
I'm going to do this.
Okay, so we're going to see if we can fix that. This is the Oh my God. Are you
Gandalf.
Maeve?
Whoever said Gandalf was right.
Yeah. Okay. That was amazing. You had power. Like, you're Neo. Anyway. Okay. So Whoa. That was a great suggestion.
I know Kung Fu.
We're going to go to mine. Mine is going to be a little bit less helpful because his was like broad and expansive and everything and free. Mine is neither free and it's very specific. But I did want to give you ideas of what I'm watching that you might enjoy. That there's a lot to watch because the show has been off the air for literally years. It's topically appropriate. And that is, and if you're, hold on. Are you seeing this? You seeing that?
See your finger.
House. Yes. So
you have to know what's in John's house to know that that says house.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing, for the members, I'm going to be doing a behind the scenes of what you can't see in this backdrop. But anyway, look, House has 8 seasons, I think. It is about medical mysteries and dealing with medicine. It's about the side effects of medicine so that we'll take it seriously, which is important when you're hearing about hydroxychloroquine all the time. It's funny. I love it. I know that there's people who absolutely hate the show, and it's like the only procedural show that I've ever watched, but it's great. It's available right now on Amazon Prime. I think it's worth a watch.
And what you should do, since Veep is streaming, you should watch Veep and House and pretend that Hugh Laurie plays the same character in both. And he's in the witness protection program.
Wait, Hugh Laurie's on Veep?
Yeah. He's great. He's fantastic. His roots were as in comedy.
I know. Yeah, and Avenue 5. There you can
Avenue
watch that
Avenue 5.
Too.
I'm halfway through that. But yeah, I love it, John. I love that you want to watch House, though I did watch it with two doctors once. And like in the first scene, they just go, brainworm. And then like 18 minutes later, Hugh Laurie's like, I think it might be a brainworm.
But we have to inject him with dog urine to find out. That's how it works. Okay, what's your number four?
Teach your mom Zoom. There's two reasons why this is helpful. One, it will take forever.
Yeah.
So that's a time suck. And then you get to talk to like parents. And if you don't want to use Zoom for the very obvious, John is, I just don't want to out John right now.
Shut up.
Fiercely Googling in the other window.
Shut up. Beep. I wanted to, no, I'm leaving a note for myself so that I'll go back to it later. That's what I do. Stop, get off my screen.
I don't care why. I just snarked on your head. You are a beep.
I left a note.
For you. You won't regret it. But teaching your parents, if you don't like Zoom, then use Skype or FaceTime or something. I had just been calling my mom, but in this time, now we FaceTime. She has deer that are like, she lives in like this area where there's deer. You get to see deer if your mom lives there. But yeah, you get to like have video conversations and you get to still have that interaction. I've worked it into my daily routine. So mm-hmm. after the show wraps, I then go FaceTime my mom right before she like bakes a potato.
Nice.
And then when the potato's ready, we go off to our regular lives. But that's a good thing.
That is nice.
With not just your parents, your kids, if you got kids, your friends, if you still have friends, I don't know why you would.
Colleagues, if you miss them.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, staying connected and helping someone out at the same time, that's pretty cool. I like that. Okay, I'm going to try to find my window. I was rapidly closing things so that he wouldn't be able to see my screen. Okay, so my number four, although as always happens with these lists, as he's doing his, I want to mentally change mine, but I won't. My number four is going to be, and this is something that a lot of you could do, hypothetically, is I want to get at least temporarily back into photography. My dogs, I haven't taken good high quality photos of them in some time. So I want to do that to document, you know, this stage of their lives. It's something that as long as you stay away from people outside, you can still do. If you don't have a camera, you probably have a phone. If not, I apologize. It's not free. What's that?
Draw.
You could draw as well. But no, I think that, and this is one of two entries on my list that are creative outlets that have nothing to do with politics, the news, or my career. And I think that for me, for Brett, for a lot of us, we have to have things that don't have to do with the lockdown, basically. And so photography is something that like more people than ever do, sort of, but they don't necessarily think a lot about it. And it's more just sort of documenting your day rather than trying to do something creative. So I think that this is an opportunity for that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's a great one.
Thank you.
I'm getting... Oh, no, I was pulling up my next one. I will also add, though, that John is an amazing dog photographer. Like, I don't compliment many people on many things, and I know that it's a me problem, but John's dogtography.
Thank you.
Photography is just undeniably fantastic. Like, it looks like the dogs like are smizing. I don't know how he does it, but it is. Follow him on Instagram, you'll see.
Thank you.
I won't get to that one yet. Next is read articles on how
that new webcam might be having some issues. There we go. You gotta take off the auto ISO or the auto exposure. I think
I would love to know how to do that,
okay,
but
well, we'll talk later. I'll teach it to you like your number four. Okay, so what's your number three?
read articles on how to stay busy during a crisis. just as I was trying to fill out my list, I had like one more swing spot. I wasn't like certain about one that was in there, and I was like, just this process of reading articles about what to do to fill time is so fun, because not only do you get to find actual helpful suggestions, but you get to mentally make fun of whoever wrote this article if their ideas are absolute crap.
Yeah,
you're just like, oh my god, I don't know who has room to outdoor garden. Or earlier you might have said to yourself, my mom doesn't have deer. How do you have deer? Like, this guy's an idiot.
What's the deer one?
I said it earlier. You weren't listening.
Sorry.
You were Googling Hugh Laurie.
I missed it. I'm always Googling Hugh Laurie. Sorry.
There's always someone in the war room, and he's always Googling Hugh Laurie. But
there's always a Chrome tab on Google Images.
There's always. So that's that. I will say that just that experience is fun and it's great. So don't stop, won't stop.
But if you can outdoor garden, that's a good idea too. I'm not against that.
I mean, I saw that perhaps in useful. One of the articles on how to keep busy during a crisis.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, my number three, and now I'm feeling so bad about this because understand, this is not a list of like the best things you could do. I could just put, you should be reading more. Obviously, we should all be reading more. But this is a specific thing that I'm thinking about doing that might be fun for you too. So if you don't want to do the 500 hours of HBO, how about 52-ish hours of the entire collected works of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And I say that because recently you might have seen that it went viral. There was someone who was sharing audience reactions from specific scenes of Endgame. And watching it, like, I felt like I was back in the theater. And the thing about it was the power of some of those moments is driven by how much you've invested into it. And over, you know, years and years. But you could also do it over the course of a few weeks. And sometimes the storylines can be complicated. It'll be easier to follow if you do it relatively quickly. It'll have more emotional impact. I understand they're not cinema. They're not the best movies ever. But they are pretty enjoyable. And so if you're looking for like a guilty pleasure that's fun and occasionally has good messages, not always, I think you could do worse than the MCU.
Yeah, and they are cinema. Come on.
Yes, it's not, you know.
They couldn't call it the cinematic universe. It's not the Marvel non-cinematic universe. And I know that's a BS argument, but it was fun to make. Yes, and I did see some people sharing those moments. And I don't like my wife to see that I have emotions. So I was like, okay, she's not here. And I was like tearing up when Captain America does something. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay, that's true. And I did too. By the way, Brett, how would you like to sign on for next week? Top 10 tearjerker moments in movies.
Oh yeah, done. I have one from.
I'm almost done
for a movie.
A trailer. Okay, no, we're doing that. Okay, I'm gonna leave a note. Okay, so if I'm googling, it's not about you, Laurie. It's about that. So, what's your number two?
My number two is the Bemis Radiant Heated Elongated Closed Front Toilet Seat in white.
What are you talking about?
This is a heated toilet seat. Everyone should get one because it allows you to spend hours, if not days, on the toilet perfectly happy. It has three adjustable settings. Mm-hmm. It has a light. You can keep it there.
No,
it has three adjustable settings, low, medium, and high, and also a light that you have that makes it so that when you are using the toilet, it lights up, John.
Mm-hmm. It needs to, because you need to see what's going on down there.
I didn't mean the direct address. I mean, it's a light up John. So in the dark, I have something like this, and mine's far more expensive because I treat myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I will sit there on the throne doing my paperwork for hours, because just a heated toilet seat will make the time fly by.
It will.
And it's hard to, for people from countries where they do have bidets like this, like, you get it, right? You just get it. Treat yourself, guys. This is $112, home shipping by April 14th, three settings, a light. You can sit there and you can stream on the toilet.
I already am. This background is just, it's just paper. It's on my bathroom.
I thought you meant stream like a pee.
What the audience should, first of all, yours is useful because toilet paper is still impossible to buy. Well, if it has a bidet, does it have a bidet?
You can sit for two cycles of digestion. So you like cut out one need for toilet paper.
That's true.
You would have had to go back.
Stop.
Again.
Stop. Okay, so what people need to know about Brett is.
This is too much?
There are jet cockpits with less attachments and technology than Brett's toilet. It's got stuff bolted onto the side, stuff in front, like
got a USB like extension cord, so I charge my phone. And it's faster than plugging it in. Yeah. It's faster than plugging it into my computer. Like, it charges quick. I'll get you one, John. I don't care.
Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully that's helpful for people. And, you know, you should get some sort of commission on that for each sale. My number two, this is something that you can do with the people you're quarantined with. My wife and I have been doing this, but you can also do it online to stay connected with your family and with your friends. A great time sink in the quarantine are all around me. They're not in focus. I don't know why I thought it would autofocus. It's not autofocus. Board games, of which there are however many you think there are 10,000 times as many. And they're not like they were when you were kids. There are awesome thematic board games that are very cool and strategic. And if you think that that's weird and too nerdy, do you like poker? Poker's cool, right? Okay, well, that's just paper and tokens on a table. So are these, buddy. And you can play them online. It's very easy. You can play them in person. They are still being delivered by any number of different sites. They're fun. They keep your brain active. They help you to connect. Some are incredibly social sort of party experiences. Play some board games. You have tons of time. Just do it.
I agree with you. I've played board games with you and your lovely wife, and it has been quite fun.
Thank you.
For hours and hours. And then my brother's not that into board games. They opened up like a Zoom conference, and then they all got the same like Monopoly app, which eliminates a lot of the issues with Monopoly, like digging through and calculating how much money you have and all that stuff. It expedites the game, which is if you are into the kind of board games that you had as a kid, that's a great way to play.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And real fast, I saw a comment asking if I have Cards Against Humanity. I did enjoy Cards Against Humanity back in the day. I'm pretty much moved on from that. But someone else asked about Pandemic. I do have a fully pimped out, blinged out copy of Pandemic with literally everything.
Like multiple versions of it, don't you?
It's everything they've ever released, and all the components. I've gotten cooler, upgraded components that I've put together into this awesome set. And anyway, it's weird to play Pandemic during a pandemic, but I do have it. And so, Brett, your number one.
My number one isn't have a hobby or undertake a hobby. It's invent a hobby. A hobby that photography, so I didn't want to say it because I was too busy complimenting you. It's done. All the pictures that could be taken, everyone says this. Everyone's taken that picture before. That's not true, but I get it. Maybe you're like, I don't want to get into photography because it's so cliched. Not to offend you, John. I just complimented you.
I'll be okay.
Dance party playlist curation. So each person comes up with their own playlist, and then you have a dance party. Or you playlist on your phone, pair to a speaker, ba ba ba, here's my song. And the person's like, oh, I'll one-up you. But you have to dance, and you have to invent dances during it. Then
you've done this with your wife?
Oh, yeah. It is real fun. Learn a skill by watching YouTube videos. This is not just having that skill. It's you come up with the dumbest skill you can fathom and see if there's a YouTube tutorial about it, and then you learn it.
Huh.
I'm talking about like lanyard making, like random things like that. Start online gambling.
Thank you.
Start betting on stupid crap that isn't sports related. So you just like look out your window and you see you bet on what could drive by next. And you do little like gamble sessions with your significant other, your kids, or you open Zoom and like try to make some money off your friends. Because there are no sports. You have to gamble on something else. Gamble on like what sport is being replayed on ESPN right now. Bet on it. Figure out how to keep a network alive despite obvious nationwide technical obstacles. John and I have done that and spent hours and hours doing it.
That's true. It's fun.
If you have nothing else to do, please, maybe you just rewatch old episodes of Viral Video Film School, youtube.com/viralvideos. And there's a new one up. So if you're wondering what I used to do and what it would look like if I did it again, I did do it again. Hopefully there's another one coming up. YouTube.com/viralvideos. We just went into Ivanka Trump's stupid Instagram and made fun of her like alone together apart or whatever it's called. So there you go.
I just opened it up because I haven't watched that one yet. And so I am looking forward to watching that. Good suggestions all. My final one is going to be one of the dumb hobbies that Brett was just ragging on. But this is more just something that I'm going to do, but I think that you could also enjoy it. It's something that obviously a lot of people have done it, as you'll see in a second, but a very small percentage of people ever do this, and I think that percentage is too low. And that is to write a novel. We have a lot of time. It takes almost no resources. You can do it with literal paper and pencil, let alone the computer or phone that you're watching this on right now. If you're on your iPad, you can do it with that. If you're seeing me, you have the capacity to do this. And everyone has any number of different stories in them based on their lives, let alone those that they can come up with based on their own experience. It's something that can fill up an endless amount of time. It doesn't have to be productive. It doesn't have to be related to anything serious. But I do think that it is a great exercise to better understand yourself and the world, is to try to write about it. I have written less than 1% of what I at an earlier age hoped I would have at this point. I finished one novel, sort of, and that is one of my deepest regrets. And so I do plan on restarting. And, you know, maybe we can set up some sort of, like, little group or something like that around TDR online if other people want to engage in this, like the opposite of a book club. But anyway, that's just one of my ideas. I plan on doing that. It is, and the reason I have it at number one is because it can fill up the most time, but also the barrier to entry on it is as low as almost any creative endeavor could possibly be. It's Friday, and as always on Friday, it's time to take out the trash. Okay, Brett, garbage people time. Who's your garbage person this week?
My garbage person this week, and it seems like a no-brainer, but I haven't done it yet, and it's Donald Trump.
You've never done Donald Trump?
I don't think I've ever done Donald Trump as a garbage person, but he is quite the garbage person. And just because there's so many reasons specifically this week in order that I'll put them in order for you. Gifting ventilators to his allies. This was covered on TYT yesterday, where essentially, like, in Colorado or Kansas, like, I think it's in Colorado. There's the governor, who's a Democrat, was like, I need this many ventilators. And then they got like 500, which is 1/10 of what they asked for, something like that. And then Trump seized the balance of those and then gifted back, not to the governor, but to a political ally, Republican senator, 100.
Wow.
Claiming that was a success story when really it was horrible. So he's essentially ransoming ventilators. And then also, he's like, maybe the compromise, the part where he's essentially like ransoming access to people on the task force if CNN and similar networks stop broadcasting his total BS press conferences every day.
Yeah.
So when CNN was like, I can't broadcast this because I can't fact check you in real time, and half the time you're not even talking about what's happening in the country as it relates to coronavirus. Like the other day you were talking about Joe Exotic. I can't cover that all the time. That is unfair, and it's unfair to the people and can run the risk of getting folks sick, especially because a new poll says that people trust Trump. People in the Republican Party trust Trump's medical advice more than they trust the CDC. This is just wildly irresponsible, and we have at least a little bit of journalistic integrity. And so Trump, through Pence, essentially said, we will not give you access to these people at all unless you broadcast the entire press conference live.
Which is
that is such a
insane.
Garbage thing to do. It is so ridiculously insane. Compound on top of that what we talked about earlier, where he's saying, I will not step down from these press conferences and do what other people suggest to do, which is allow the experts to speak. And then the reason for that, when he yells at the Wall Street Journal editorial board who made that suggestion and calls them fake, he's just a giant tub of farts, and I hate him. And the reason he cites is ratings.
Yeah.
Ratings is why, not the health and safety and protection of everyone in America, which is his job, his charge. No, he wants to keep doing it because ratings. You well and truly are a garbage person. I'm going to light my phone on fire because it housed a photograph of this guy.
You are indisputably correct. In another way, which we'll get to in just a sec. But yeah, you're right. I mean, no one is doing more just awful stuff, as well as he's just enthusiastically lying. And the thing that makes it the worst is the support that he's getting from elected Republicans, from the right-wing media. Like, he has jumped the shark 100 times over in the past 4 weeks, and they've gone with him. They saw him jump the shark, and they were like, you know, put me on the skis, and they want to go too. Hey, they want to go too. It's awful. Okay, I'm going to go to someone that is now going to seem less garbagey by comparison, perhaps. My garbage person was garbagey in this way a bit ago, but today finally got their comeuppance for it, as you'll see.
Got to come up with something, and I find it rich.
So
that Congressman Gates is talking about politicizing this after the stunt you pulled on the House floor with that gas mask. I hope you're going to lend that to your constituents.
Give me a break.
So
I was making
vote,
a point
Matt.
That we should be concerned about it as Congressman,
making,
because in Congress, we go through the dirtiest airports, and we interact with a lot of people. And by
that
the way,
the point
I've been right.
Making,
a lot of members of Congress
nice
have turned out to be positive. So give me a break. You can't ascribe my motives any more than anyone else.
Okay, so what that individual was referring to was this instance back a few weeks ago, where Gates wore a gas mask on the floor of the House and tweeted. It's still available. You can go see it right now. Tweeted about it, making light of the coronavirus that he would go into isolation for just days after that. His constituents started dying from it shortly after that photo. Now we're going to hit 500,000 Americans very soon. Who have it. It was very funny to him. It was a joke to him. So he's a joke to us, and he's a joke that resides in the trash.
Yeah.
The thing that makes it most really fast, the thing that makes it garbagey for me is not just what he originally did. It's what he just did right there, which is to pretend that it was about something about airports, and how can you ascribe motives to me? Like, when you see that, again, this gets to the myth of conservative masculinity. Anyone who so obviously lies to cover up what they were doing, who is so terrified of coming to grips with the ridiculous joke that they tried to play, now the joke is on us, come admit it. Just admit that you were wrong. Be an actual man. But they can't do it. They can't do it because they're scared of the appearance of being wrong, the appearance of weakness. And so in trying to avoid that, they become actually stupid, actually weak, actually wrong.
Yeah. I agree. Couldn't agree more.
Thank you. God. And we're not going to show more of the video, but he just continued to deny that nobody thinks it had to do with airports and what congressmen, let's say that hypothetically that was what he wanted to joke about. How would wearing the gas mask on the floor of the House communicate that? It doesn't make any sense to anybody.
It doesn't. And all the things he was doing at the time, like, hey, just having a normal day here.
Yeah.
No, you were 100%. Downplaying the severity of this crisis, and your actions compounded with the people you were trying to please at the time got folks killed.
Yeah.
Sorry, Matt.
Yeah. So those are our garbage people of the week. Feel free to let us know what you think in the chat right now. We do know, though, what you thought leading up to it, because thanks to our awesome producer Angel, she has been asking on the community tab of the Damage Report YouTube channel in advance who the audience thinks should be our garbage person, and it looks like the audience is leaning in the direction of Brett Ehrlich. Not that he should be the garbage person, but 75% said, and this is with 10,000 votes, said that Trump should be the garbage person. Jared Kushner is at 17%. You know, he recently said that, like, the national stockpile is just for them, I guess. Governor Kemp is at 6%. He just learned that you could be asymptomatic and spread coronavirus like 20 minutes ago.
And then he was like, this is a very real crisis, so I'm closing things down. I'm also going to reopen the beaches.
Yeah. And Peter Navarro is at 3%. So Trump is leading the way there. It's probably going to be pretty common that he is, though. And so, Brett, I guess you win this week.
Yeah. Maybe they get immunity the following week. They aren't on the Twitter poll. We'll
That's
see what
good
it
point.
Is.
You get immunity. It's like the opposite of the quickfire challenge in Top Chef. Obviously, America is dealing with a disaster right now. Many countries are, but we can't forget that for many countries, this is just the latest issue that they're having to deal with. And some have been in the grip of massive poverty, civil war, and other issues for some time. And joining us now to get us up to date with what's been going on with Syria recently is the senior correspondent and producer of Vice News, Isabel Young. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
glad to have you here. And, you know, in just a couple of days, Sunday, 8 p.m. Vice on Showtime, your episode of your experiences in Syria is going to be available for everyone. And, you know, I want to find out as much as we can about what you saw there.
Yeah, well, I mean, so we went in there at the end of February. So this was after a couple of months of the Syrian regime increasing their onslaught on the province of Idlib, which has about 3 million or so civilians contained within that. You know, this is part of Assad's latest attempt to retake, as he said, every inch of Syria, which is in his intention. And it's a really brutal battle that is taking place. I mean, what we saw on the ground was indiscriminate bombing of civilians, of hospitals, of schools, of medical facilities. And it was really, really horrific. You know, this has become, it's been grinding on this civil war over 9 years now. But currently this is the worst humanitarian crisis that Syria has seen so far.
And so I've seen various estimates of, you know, what percentage of the territory is now under the regime's control. You know, as an outsider and obviously not an expert on this, I would have assumed that as more control was gained over the territory, some of the wanton violence might be scaled back. But it doesn't look like that's happening. And you've seen massive poverty and increasing hunger and things like that. So as you were traveling and as you were speaking with people, what are the expectations in these regions for what, you know, the next period, the next few months, the next year actually holds?
Well, I mean, it's not looking massively hopeful, I have to say. You know, the day that we left was actually the day that there was a ceasefire declared. That ceasefire is sort of still holding, but it is extremely fragile. You know, these ceasefires have been in place in the past and none of them have lasted. The Syrian population that we're talking to, that I'm still in contact with, do not have particularly high hopes about the ceasefire holding. You know, almost 1 million people have been displaced over the last few months, and not a lot of them are going back homes, which means that they don't really trust that there is going to be any form of lasting peace. And then you add on to that what is happening with, you know, as we know, the coronavirus spreading around the world. Obviously, Syria is at huge risk. You know, the WHO have described this as a slow-moving tsunami, which is moving towards their country. And particularly Idlib is at risk because, you know, it's a rebel-held territory, the last rebel-held territory. And so getting supplies, getting tests, getting anything there in a place where infrastructure is already so destroyed is it doesn't look like a very bright picture, I'm afraid.
I definitely want to return to coronavirus in just a moment, but because you mentioned the ceasefire, one thing that we've been wondering is when you're on the ground, and you mentioned that previous ceasefires, the situation right now is very fragile, that previous ones have been broken, and very often when these sorts of things happen, it seems difficult from the outside to know exactly who is to blame for it. Often there are rumors and accusations, propaganda and things like that. How do you come to grips with trying to understand who actually is breaking it, what the conditions were that led to the break of a ceasefire? How do you, like, sort out actual verifiable information from all of the rumors and all of that?
Yeah, well, as you said, it is really difficult. And, you know, without being there the whole time, it's also more difficult. And also, you know, we're going there, we're being invited there by HCS, which is, you know, the group that is in charge and in control of that area at the moment. So what we're seeing is somewhat restricted. But what helps is that there are a lot of people who have been studying this area. We've worked closely with a research group called Syria in Context, who does really close analysis on it. And they're also using open source investigative techniques to figure out where exactly the fighting is coming from. You know, if these ceasefires are broken, who is breaking it? And yeah, who's ultimately accountable?
And so to return to the coronavirus, and you described it as a slow-moving tsunami, or the WHO did, the people there are already obviously incredibly insecure in a number of different ways, not just from violence, but probably disease, hunger, and all those things that we've been talking about. I assume there's got to be quite a bit of fear on the ground about how bad it could be when it hits. And I wonder, with the current situation, how ready is the government to do anything about it? How willing is the government to do anything about it when it has seemed in the past to be quite willing to stomach, you know, a very high level of civilian deaths. Do you feel that the ability and the will, the resources will actually be there to stop widespread loss of life from COVID-19?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the WHO have warned that up to 100,000 people in Syria could die from this. I mean, you know, the whole country is really struggling. I think up to 70% of medical workers have had to flee the country. But Idlib and the rebel-held territory is particularly vulnerable, given that, you know, cooperation between the different administrative regions is not particularly strong, and they're already on their knees. I mean, these are people who are living in sprawling camps, if they're lucky. Some of them are living, you know, in olive groves. Some of them are living by the roadside. They really have no access to anything. I mean, the thought of social distancing or even having access to soap or running water is laughable. So, yeah, it's a really, really scary time. And, you know, having spoken to people on the ground, they just sort of throw their hands up about it when you ask them, because they feel like this is just one more thing. A lot of these people, remember, in Idlib province have fled from various different regions throughout the last 9 years of civil war. And this is not the first time they fled. This is not the first battle that they've seen. And they have a realistic view when it comes to what happens next, because it's just so dire that they've sort of stopped feeling any fear. There's nothing left in them.
And there, in relation to this particular disaster with coronavirus, there has been you know, quite a bit of international cooperation, different countries helping each other. Is that even an option in this case? Would they have the access? Would they, like, if countries wanted to assist and try to stop that horrific number that you mentioned earlier, would that even be possible? Is there any hope that other countries, that the UN or individual countries, could potentially come in the near future and assist Syria?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hope is limited, I have to say, because, you know, I think the Idlib Health Directive has said that what they've seen from the UN is just merely words on paper. They haven't really seen any actionable response coming from the international community. You know, obviously the world is in a crisis. Every country is looking out for themselves. A lot of places have banned PPE being exported to other places. And we have to also remember that, you know, Syria, and particularly Idlib, is starting at a very, very low priority level. It's not as if, you know, when 900,000 people or so fled to Idlib, or fled to the border of Turkey over the last few months, it's not as if the international community leapt to help them. You know, a lot of aid hasn't been reaching really people who are in really, really desperate need of it.
Yeah. And as we alluded to in the beginning of this this video, this is going to be an episode that is coming out for Vice on Sunday. What are some of the other subjects that are going to be covered in this season on Showtime?
So for me, I'm covering, obviously, there's a lot of coronavirus topics, which is inescapable.
That's understandable.
Yeah. I've actually been in Italy for the past while, reporting on the situation here, which, as we know, was kind of the first Western country to see a big coronavirus outbreak. I was also reporting from India earlier on, and yeah, there's a lot of other stuff that is coming up. I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about it, but yeah.
Then I won't go too specific then. I am just curious because, you know, obviously I have a lot of admiration for the sort of work that you do. When you're going from a war zone to an area like Italy, which has been just about as hard hit as anywhere in the world in terms of coronavirus, how much worries do you have for your own safety?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's so much about my own safety, but obviously, you know, with something like this virus, the safety of other people and public safety is of our main concern. And so a lot of protocols, a lot of precautions, a lot of mitigations have gone into place in order to just be able to move and to leave our home, and a lot of analysis over whether or not that should be worth it. And so obviously, you know, when you're making a show that is an international series, these things are really challenging.
Yeah. understandably so. But, you know, we really do admire what you're doing and making sure that people have information from on the ground. Isabel, the three episodes are available. We're going to have a link in the description of this video where people can go watch that. And hopefully they'll tune in to your episode this Sunday. And we want to thank you for joining us on the Damage Report today.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it. Stay safe.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.